If you would mind recording, thank you. Welcome to the Sunday night There Is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. This meeting is being recorded, so you may visit our website at oaontario.org, where you'll find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep the special service active. The specific link is being posted in the chat. The opinions expressed are those of the individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. Our speaker today is a compulsive overeater who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there'll be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Welcome, Sally, a compulsive overeater from New York. Sally, you're muted. Actually, you're muted and no picture.
Where did she go? Good time for the Serenity Prayer. Jess, do you want to call her and see if she's okay?
Pat, Jessica can't
Yeah.
believe it. Never mind. You're right.
I'm trying to contact her. Can you guys still see me? Yeah.
Yes.
She's got her notifications muted, so I'm trying to contact her. So let me give that another try. So we don't see you or hear you. I don't know if we lost you altogether. No, she
No,
was just talking.
she's muted now. She did unmute for a minute.
Sorry, one second. Is Sally on the line at all? Can anyone see her?
No,
Because
we
she
can't see or
thinks,
hear her.
I think you left the meeting, Sally.
No, she's still on here. She's still
Her
on Zoom.
box is still there. It says Sally A in a
Yeah.
box.
Oh. Okay.
She's
So,
still here.
is Sally able to unmute herself and
She
turn on
is
her video?
unmuted.
She's
Yes, she's
unmuted
unmuted.
now.
Now she's
Because I.
unmuted.
Okay, Sally. I think you're
Oh,
unmuted
now she
now.
just muted herself.
But you just muted yourself again. I
There, now
think
she's.
you have to let her turn her video back on too.
I did, but she's a co-host anyway.
So, yeah, you're muted again. Now you're unmuted, and you should be able to turn, and now you can turn your video back on. You've just muted yourself again. I think you're hitting your mute button over and over again.
Going to the left, and hitting done speaking, and I'm hitting the mute, unmute button, but the video is stopped. I'm not sure how to make it start. So
Go
how?
do you want to maybe try leaving and then joining again?
She goes out, I'll get back in.
Yeah, go out and come back in.
That did work before. Let's try that again.
Okay, Sally's gonna. Okay, so why don't you? Yeah.
Please. I've left. Okay.
You're still in the meeting. No, I can still see you there.
Why can we hear her when she's muted?
It's a good question.
She's
Yeah,
talked
she
just left.
Jessica. Now
She
she's
just
gone.
left.
Jess, you can turn your video back on.
Second. Oh, I knew this was gonna happen. Sorry, guys.
We're
That's
hearing her
okay.
talk. We're hearing her talk through your
Here.
phone.
Go back to my Zoom. Come back in. Okay.
Okay. You're coming back now?
There she is.
Can you see
I got
me?
you. I just admitted you.
Yeah, we can see you. You have to unmute yourself now.
Okay.
You've just turned your video off, but you're unmuted. Now you're muted again.
Okay, I'm unmuted.
Okay.
Video on?
Your video is on and you're not muted, but we can't hear you for some reason. I don't know. It could be because you're talking to me, so I'm gonna hang up, okay? Okay. Sally, are you able to speak now? I don't know if she
I
can hear
think
us.
so.
Okay,
Oh,
great. We got you.
Fano, I'm so
Good.
happy, you guys. I am so just not good at all this stuff, especially Zoom. Zoom is kind of like a real thorn in my flesh. Okay, let me not waste any time, you guys, because I feel bad that we have lost time. So first, let me say thank you so much for inviting me to share my story. I do feel like I belong here. I've often thought to myself, man, I am the queen of relapse. And I'm Sally A. I live in New York. I am, by the grace and mercy of God, I am recovered and truly believe that it is a miracle. I've been in the program 42 years, mostly on. I have gotten frustrated and walked away, only to find that there is no place to go. Because, as step one tells us, I couldn't stop. I couldn't stop eating, and I couldn't control my eating. And for me, a portion has always been when it's all gone. That's pretty much the standard for my portion, when it's all gone. I came into the program when I was 22. From the age of 14 until I was 22, I thought I was normal, that I would fast for once for 30 plus days, most of the time for 2 weeks, and I developed bulimia. I honestly thought, because my mother was bulimic, I thought this was normal. This is how people controlled their weight, that they intermittently had these bulimic episodes, but mostly I would fast. And then the minute I would stop fasting, my food would be out of control. And when I was 22, I had my second child. And when I had my kids, my first daughter, I was just fasting and bulimic until I got pregnant. And then as soon as I got pregnant, I was at a quandary. What am I going to do? I can't do that, not when I'm pregnant. And so I ballooned from 132 to 230 pounds when I gave birth to my daughter. I was just having a party. Everybody was telling me, that's okay, you're eating for two. Oh, please. I was eating for six. Then I was very depressed when I didn't lose all the weight. I was shocked. And about 2 years later, I gave birth to my son. I went right back up to the 230 pound mark, was so upset because I didn't know what I was going to do to fix this. And then someone from my church came to me and said, do you want to lose weight? And I said, yeah. And she goes, I'm going to take you to a meeting. It doesn't cost anything. I'm going to pick you up and take you. She didn't tell me OA. She didn't say anything. I was thinking to myself in preparation for that night, I am going to pull up my pants. I am going to do whatever they tell me to do. I don't care if they tell me to lick the line in the middle of a highway. I will do whatever they say. And when I walked in and I stood, they used to stand for the 12 steps.
And when they started the 12 steps, all I heard was, we admitted we were powerless over food and that our lives were unmanageable. When I heard those words, I totally went into sort of a twilight zone. And I was talking to myself, thinking, oh my gosh, this is the right place. These people are like me. They are powerless over food. I can't even, I mean, I was just lost in space. So that's how I came into the program. Within about 7 months, I had lost all of my weight. I don't know how I did that, but I was strict and I went back down to 138. I was very happy with my weight and I stayed in the program. I knew that it worked and this worked for quite a while. I started to climb up largely because I was hugging around with bread. I just didn't want to give it up. My slogan was, I'm Italian. Pasta is in my genetics. They can't tell me this is possible. I don't mind giving up sugar. And it's really funny because I can't believe what a hard time I had about letting go of bread. So my weight started to climb. At the time that this was going on, I was a professional singer and songwriter. I played the guitar professionally. And I was really flipping out because I was gaining weight when I knew I was going to be doing cable television, television shows. And it was like, I didn't know what to do. And I remember I sat on my bedroom floor and I was just totally panicked. And I surrendered and I prayed. And it was that day, I was probably about 32 at that point, and I had decided I have to give up bread completely. I can't think I'm going to have breaded things. For my body, I can't do it. And so I gave up bread and I, stabilized again. I felt really good about myself. I was, working the program. But the truth of the matter is, I was largely leaning on me. And when I said the steps, honestly, it was God help me. It was me that was fighting the food and fighting the, to do everything right. I spent 5 years in a program that was very tool focused. And actually, I do feel that it gave me a strong foundation. Because a lot of those tools are helpful and important to my recovery. But, as Harlan always says, getting abstinent, being abstinent is the entry ramp. I think that was brilliant when I heard it the first time a few weeks ago. I was like, oh my goodness, that is so true because it's the entrance ramp to the highway, and the highway is the steps. So let me tell you that putting the food down for me has been a process. There came a point in my program where my ex-husband used to say to me, I don't want to hear what you don't eat. I want to hear what you do eat. That list is shorter. And it was true. I used to focus on what I couldn't eat, which was so negative, instead of focusing on all the great things that God has given me to eat. And it has changed my mindset to a more positive mindset. But now let me get to the point of the many relapses and why I'm finally, I believe, out of relapse and in a permanent recovery, because that's what this is about tonight. I had relapsed over and over. I had two times in my program, 5 years. I had probably three times. 7 months. I had a lot of 10 days, a lot of 2 weeks, and a lot of 3 weeks. And in between, lots of relapse, which was very, very frustrating because, I might lose 2 pounds in the 2 weeks. But then when I would go back into the food, I would be binging and gain 10 pounds. And so I was very frustrated by the program. I really was beside myself with this problem because I am the person who honestly has lost most likely 500 pounds in my lifetime. Three times I've lost 100 pounds, And I have lost 10 pounds and 20 pounds, but I have gained it all back 3 times. I have gained back the 100 pounds. And so in the last 2 years, and let me go to the last 2 years because I think that's the most important thing that you need to hear from me tonight. About 9 years ago, I was very stressed. My youngest daughter was having her first baby. I had three other grandchildren. I'm 65, so I was a young grandmother. That's a long story too. But I had my kids young. By the time I was 24, I had three babies. And so when my daughter had her first baby, my youngest daughter, I honestly was afraid for the child because she and her husband were such flakes. They were truly two peas in a pod. I didn't know how this kid was going to make it. And so I moved to New York, even though my sponsor had warned me, don't go and move next to your kids because we are very close, honestly, a little enmeshed. And but I didn't really think that this kid could handle having her own business, and her husband was in his own world, and this little boy that was a great concern to me. So I moved to New York about 9 years ago because my grandson's nine. And it all started with a Dorito. I always thought, oh, big deal, corn. Corn is a problem for me. You know, they used to have corn liquor. So I picked up this Dorito and I remember distinctly hiding the bag of Dorito behind my daughter's couch because they all knew that I had this abstinence thing going on and I had been abstinent for 5 years and I was very busy in 12-step work at the time. I was very, very, very consistent with listening to meetings. For me, my home meeting is Vision for You, which I had been listening to Vision for You since the day it started. And so I was abstinent for all those years. So what happened? People have asked me this question. What in the world happened, Sally? What happened was first I picked up that Dorito and then I just went wild. I was like a wild, this is how I describe myself. I was like a werewolf running through the field. Hair was growing on my back, and I was knee deep in the food. And I was just like I did a deep blue dive into the quicksand that Bill talks about. And every time I would try to come out, I would have a little window. Harlan would say this to me. Many times in those 9 years, I had these four people that would not let me go. They were annoying to me at the time. But one of the things that Harlan would say to me, and I'll never forget it, Sally, when I would call him desperate, Harlan, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do to get out of the food. And he would say, Sally, you have a very little window here. You're thinking clearly for this little window. You have to take a quick action. And it was true, but I couldn't do it. I didn't realize how important that little window was. And so back into the quicksand I dove. And I had these little periods where I'd come out and I would grab onto a sponsor. They'd pull me out of the quicksand, a couple of feet. I'd get abstinent for like 2 months, and then I would just slip and slide back into the quicksand. This was going on for 9 years, back and forth, in and out. And this after 5 years of abstinence. So finally, about 2 years ago, I had decided, as a professional in the medical field, I have a master's in psych. I work in many different areas in the medical field. I had decided, I had five different doctors telling me you're killing yourself. I had these esophageal Barrett syndrome, and my doctor who was giving me these endoscopies was telling me, Sally, you're going to die from what you're doing to the gas, the acid reflux you're doing to your esophagus. That's going to kill you. And if that doesn't kill you, I had developed what do you call that with the CPAP, That's how I always described it with the CPAP machine, like I became Darth Vader. That's how I sounded to myself. And I didn't like wearing it, so I wasn't willing to wear it, and that was dangerous too. I was developing diabetes. My doctor was screaming at me, "Sally, what are you doing?" You know, I was back to about 230 pounds. Long story short, I made the decision, I'm going to get the surgery. And because, not that I needed the more severe surgery, but because I had this acid reflux, I was being told by a number of doctors, "You have to get that type of surgery, Sally, because the sleeve will cause the acid to go into your throat. You have to get the bypass so there is no acid going into your throat." So I got the surgery, and that was like a process. It takes like a year to get that surgery because you have to jump through a number of hoops. So I got the surgery about 2 years ago, and then I was so happy. I was so excited. This is it. I had tried Ozempic before that, by the way, and I knew that that was not healthy. I had learned from a number of doctors why it wasn't healthy and what it was doing to people's bodies. So I got the surgery. I lost about 50 to 60 pounds. And then something happened. You see, the disease is between my ears. And I started to go up, and I knew, oh my goodness, I'm supposed to lose 150 pounds with this surgery, but I'm not going to because I'm now going up. And so I came back to the program and I lied. I never told anybody. Nobody knew that I had the surgery because I was embarrassed that I was, quote, looking for the easier, softer way. And so I didn't tell anybody, including my sponsor. I got abstinent, and I can't describe it. The dishonesty was whittling at me until finally I was going back into the food. My sponsor, smart enough to know, dropped me and said, "No, something is wrong. You're not being honest." And I couldn't be honest with her until about 7 months later, I came back, and I had dis the only reason why I came back is because I lost my wallet. I know this sounds crazy, but I lost my wallet for a week. And you know, the number one, the step one tells us we admitted we were powerless over food. Well, I knew that, and that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, the word unmanageable never resonated with me. The word actually for me is disorganized. When my food is disorganized, my life is disorganized. And my life was disorganized because my food was disorganized. I was living in this trifecta. I was binging, I was watching TV, and I was in bed doing it. That was my Bermuda Triangle. It was killing me. And so I realized that I was very disorganized. I knew I was disorganized. I had that little window. I had called Harlan and said, "I don't know what to do." Harlan was again pointing out, "You have a little window here, the window of your thinking straight, Sally, that you know something's really wrong. You need to take action." Those were his words. You need to take action. And so when I lost my wallet, I was literally thrust into a new level of disorganized, and I couldn't function. And so after a week of losing my wallet and being in total, "What am I going to do, God?" I taken a bath, I got out of the bath, and I got on my knees, and I said, "God, if you help me find my wallet, I'll go back to OA." I knew God wanted me to go back to OA. I knew it for years that God wanted me to go back to OA. I did not want to go to OA because I really felt like this is another humiliating thing in my life that after all these years, I'm still obese and I can't do it. And so that night, of course, my son, who has the same type of car that I have, he said, "Mom, I could tell something's wrong." And he went out to my car with me when I told him about my wallet. And he just randomly started looking in my car. And of course, he pulled my wallet out. And my first thought was not, "Oh, great, I have my wallet." It was, "Oh, I have to go back to OA." And so I started making phone calls to the four people that were continuously reaching out to me. I got on a vision and I announced myself once again. I do see the clock. And I said out loud, I'm back again. I need help. And this is the key thing that I would like to drill home. I said to God, I really am not even going to try anymore. I reached the end of me. That apparently was the secret. It wasn't hitting bottom, because I thought I hit bottom about 15 times in 42 years. No, it was when I finally said out loud to my God, I'm done. I really can't do this. I absolutely know that I can't do this. Therefore, you're going to have to do it for me. Those were the miraculous words, the Walt Disney World of my life. You are going to have to do it for me. And so I want to bring up this particular section in on page 55, which I know about, and I've read this big book many, many, many times. I have read through this big book. I've taken over 200 people through the big book. So it's never been a lack of knowledge. And interestingly, I thought it was about knowledge. But the truth is, someone said to me pretty recently, the big book is the treasure map. God is the treasure. I was so fixated on studying the big book, knowing the big book, connecting the dots of all the different places in the big book that said different things that were important. But here on page 55, in that second paragraph, actually, we were fooling ourselves. Boy, was I fooling myself. For deep down in every man, woman, and child is the fundamental idea of God. In other words, God created a hole in my soul that could only be filled with God. I tried for most of my life, I'm 65, most of my life, I tried to fill the hole with food, with anything that would make me numb, the television, food. And there are probably other things too that I have done that were numbing me. Down deep inside, God created this spot inside of me. It may be obscured by calamity. It might be blocked by pomp, my ego, by worship of other things, food, TV, a number of things. The important thing, though, is that I finally came to God. And step one, I admitted that I was powerless over food, which I had done for many years, and that my life had become disorganized. That's the word I had to use. Step two, I came to believe that I could not do it at all. I could take the motions. I get on a vision for you. I consider it my chemotherapy. You could think of it as dialysis if that works for you. For me, I know that I'm sick when I'm in the food. I must get my chemo. I must be on for every minute. I must hear the steps and not think that I'm so smart and so knowledgeable. I've already memorized all of it, that I don't get on the meeting and hear it from the first minute to the very last drop. That's important for me. And so I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, that God would do it, not me, that God wouldn't help me do it, that God would do it. I made a decision to turn. That this is important because a lot of people continually say, the word they use is surrender, surrender, surrender. I want to tell you that I thought I did surrender. I've been a Christian since I was 18. That's who my God is. But the truth of the matter is, I didn't practice, practice, practice. I want to draw your attention to page 87. I could go step by step through these steps, but I want to tell you this is what has saved my life. And this is what has led me to these 6 months of glorious abstinence that I didn't try, except that the only thing I did was say every morning, Please, God, give me pink cloud abstinence. Just give this to me because I can't do it and I know it. As we go through the day, we pause. This is the bottom of 87. As we go through the day, we pause. When agitated, which is resentful, when doubtful, that's fear. And we ask for the right thought or action. We constantly remind ourselves we are no longer, running the show, humbly saying to ourselves and to our God many times each day, Thy will be done. There's the surrender part of this. Thy will be done. I accept whatever is happening throughout my day. We are then in much less danger of excitement. Somebody said recently on the line that excitement makes me crazy. It makes me turn to the food. I don't know how to calm myself. But honestly, we are much less in danger of excitement or fear or anger or worry or self-pity or foolish decisions because we turn to God instead. And this is what I believe has made the difference. Number one, that I recognize I am not just powerless, but that I realize all the power for me to recover has to come from God. Not that He will help me, but that He will do it for me. I have to realize that I take these steps every day, each and every one of them. And as I go through the day, I practice, practice, practice. This part here, we do not, where it says, Thy will be done, which is the surrender, really, step seven. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. That to me is step 10, which of course is step four, five, and six, all scrunched together into step 10. And step 11 is basically step seven. Step 11 and seven are akin to each other. So when we're living, and I say it like this, I feel that when I was traveling to become recovered, and by the way, I traveled very quickly. I found a sponsor who would allow me to do one chapter a day in the big book. And within 3 weeks, I was recovered. And since I've been recovered, two people have managed to stick with me and stick with God and clear their schedules completely and get recovered in 3 weeks. Because that is, it shouldn't take more than that, honestly. And so I took step one. I read the first chapter, Doctor's Opinion. I listened to a podcast. I reported to my sponsor, shared the most important parts. They shared with me what was most important. Did the same thing with each chapter, walking straight ahead until about a week later, I was in step four. And I was quickly doing step four. One day, 4 hours I gave myself. And then I went to my sponsor and did five, six, seven, eight, because you're supposed to be doing eight while you're doing step four. And as you're going through it, you're figuring out where do I own amends. There's my list for step eight. Step nine, I started doing my amends. Once you do one amends, you're in 10. As soon as you do an amends and you give it away, if you read carefully, you'll see that you are in 10, but you are continuing to do your ninth step. And so I reached 10, 11, and 12. It's an island in the sun. It is the Bahamas of my mind. I am living in the island of recovery, one day at a time. I get up in the morning. I spend time with my God, praying and centering myself. I get on the meeting and get my chemo because I must get my medicine every morning. I work with other people because I know that I must do this in order for me to keep hearing. You know, verbal expression deepens impression. So every time I speak to other people about recovery, every time I read, every time we work the steps, I am hearing in my two ears the steps of recovery, and I am getting re-recovered in the process. That's why it's so important to quickly start again with another person and yet go forward once a week with the recovered people in your life. So I know I've said a lot here, and I hope it has made sense. The most important thing I want to leave you with as I come to the end of this share is that it is all about your God. I'm sorry if you haven't found that, if you haven't been able to do that, getting on, I don't want to say getting on your knees because not everybody has to get on their knees, but if you haven't developed that relationship, I want you to know that is the real problem. I had a very strong relationship with food. Walking away from that relationship would have been impossible had I not been sculpting and developing my relationship with my God, my higher power. That is the secret. Pulling away from that sick relationship with food. This was a comfort zone for me. Since I was a child, I used food and the television to numb myself and to dissociate. And now, here I am as an adult, pulling away from this old friend, this old best friend, food, and now developing a close walk, a close relationship with my higher power. Therein lies recovery. Thanks for letting me share. With that, I pass.
Thank you so much, Sally. So glad it worked out that we could hear your strong, wonderful message. Now is the time for